Okay, where do we go from here, Michelle?
Well,
let me put your mic on. Okay.
Am I live now?
You're live.
I'm going to continue with this official police department report that was given to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I'm going to skip ahead to page 18, where militia ties are discussed, and I quote, "Within 48 hours of the blast, the media shifted its attention to so-called right-wing militias, described in the same sentence as, quote, fringe radical hate groups, close quote. Extreme efforts were made by mainstream reporters to connect McVeigh with the militia movement, in particular, the Michigan militia. Though McVeigh may have attended one of their meetings, no one could remember him being there, and he later stated that he was never at one of their meetings and was not a member. Backtracking this series of events leads back to the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith and the Southern Poverty Law Center, both of which have been designated, quote, experts, close quote, on right-wing and hate groups by the New York City-based mainstream media. Anyone who has researched the militia movement and other non-paramilitary groups considered part of the Patriot movement will quickly realize the ADL assertions are not only flawed, but appear to be highly slanted, inflated propaganda. The profile of those in these movements would match people who would guard the federal buildings, not attack them. Instead of forming to overthrow the government, as the ADL suggests, they appear to form to be a local home guard to resist unconstitutional moves by government officials. Such moves may be real or imagined, but the fear exists, thus the formation and growth of the movements." That's pretty good.
That's really good, yes. And it's what we've been telling people all along. You see, they can't take this country down, ladies and gentlemen. They cannot destroy the United States of America and have their totalitarian, one-world, socialist government if Americans are armed and if they are formed into militias to resist tyranny. And that is why they must disarm the American people. They must discredit and destroy the militia of America. Most of you don't realize it, but if you're between the ages of 17 and 45, you are in the militia, according to the law, whether you want to be or not. Either the militia of your state or the militia of the United States, and are both.
Synopsis of this report, page 23. As stated at the beginning, several questions had to be answered in an effort to further, if not complete, this investigation. One of the main questions was, who benefited? First, it becomes obvious that under close scrutiny, especially in light of the events that followed the bombing and the reactions of so-called right-wing radicals and militia types, that such an act was the worst thing that could have happened to them and their various causes. Almost all that were interviewed were both shocked and enraged that anyone would perpetrate such an activity. Still, they became the focus of negative media attention for an extended period and even investigated by a congressional subcommittee concerning whether or not they were, quote, a threat to national security, close quote. In the end, not one right-wing group benefited from the Oklahoma City bombing. However, when the investigation into motives shifts to other possible benefactors, three main groupings seem to be apparent. One, drug traffickers and money launderers. Two, radical left-wing political organizations. And three, certain government bureaucracies currently under investigation. This last is added because it is one of the main focuses of attention by the various citizens groups and organizations that consider such agencies as the BATF an out-of-control, oppressive entity. The question is, in what way do these various entities benefit?
I want to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that we are reading from an official report written by an investigator for the Oklahoma City Police Department that was submitted to the Oklahoma City Police Department and to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and is on record with both agencies. Where do we go now?
One moment, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Vent.
She's going through the pages to try to get to the next item of interest in this report.
Well, it's you know, this report is 30 pages long, and we just can't read all of it. I'm going to skip ahead to, well, we're still talking about who benefited, to left-wing political action groups and entities. One, such an event, the bombing, would provide a great boost to sagging liberal policy, considering what has happened since November 1994. When the power shifted in Congress from the left to the right, many things began to happen. One of these was the second look at portions of the omnibus crime bill, such as the ban on so-called assault weapons. Isn't it interesting that the police call them so-called assault weapons?
Yes, because there's no such thing. A screwdriver is an assault weapon if I use it to poke your eye out.
Oh, well, continuing. The Brady Law and other previous liberal victories. With the exception of a handful of liberal congressmen and senators, the attack on the NRA, the Christian Coalition, and other conservative groups slowed in intensity to virtually a trickle of what had been previously on the agenda. But immediately after the bombing, this attack renewed its strength. Two, the dormant anti-terrorism bill was revived, inflated, and put on the fast track to passage, a mainstream liberal objective. Three, focus of attention shifted from investigations into Whitewater, Waco, Ruby Ridge, MENA, ATF conduct, and the death of Vincent Foster, all originally scheduled to begin congressional investigations 4 weeks after Oklahoma City, to, quote, more pressing issues, close quote. Four, media preparation of the, quote, mind of the public, close quote, to accept laws that infringe on the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Shortly after the bombing, several polls were conducted asking the question, how many of your rights would you be willing to give up to be secure from terrorism? Five, a new barbarian at the gate in the form of militias was created in the media, giving citizens a domestic threat to worry about. This follows the typical Hegelian principle of creating a problem to force a solution not readily accepted by the subject previous to creation of the problem. As an example, one can observe the media and politicians connect guns and drugs. Drugs, according to them, are the problem, but the solution is to take away the guns. This obviously... Let me finish the sentence, Bill.
I can't help it.
This obviously has little, if any, correlation. But the end objective is to use the drug problem as a means of reducing the number of firearms in the hands of the citizenry. Okay, now you can crack up.
These people have absolutely no logic whatsoever.
Well, this police officer is extremely sharp and right on the money.
Yes.
Are we going to say something?
No.
Okay. All right. Number six, Anti-Defamation League and Southern Poverty Law Center benefited by utilizing the media to draw attention to their causes, attack their perceived enemies, the ADL-identified hate groups, and bolster their liberal following and possibly their financial contributions. And I would comment on this, too, that after the bombing, Maurice Deves was seen all over television everywhere. He came to the University of Oklahoma campus and gave a great big speech and promoted the sales of his anti-militia book, and he made a mint off of this bombing. So, yeah, I would say it most definitely benefited their financial contributions.
Yes.
Continuing discussing who benefited from the bombing, we are now at the point of government bureaucracies under investigation. It says, quote, it would be remiss to not mention those government bureaucracies and sub-organizations suspected by many citizens as benefactors of the bombing. One, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. The BATF, after the failed raid at Waco, the Ruby Ridge debacle, which cost the government taxpayers $3.5 million, and other reported abuses of power, was to come under government congressional investigation in the summer months. It was rumored that steps were being considered to disband the BATF. Also to occur in May were the scheduled Waco hearings. It has been reported that the Waco investigation documents and all documents seized from the Mount Carmel were kept in files at the Murrah Building. Also, if the story of the stakeout on the Murrah Building to, quote, catch the bomber, close quote, has substance, and due to timing such did not occur and the bomb did explode after the ATF went off duty, it would be extremely awkward for ATF personnel to come forward in the aftermath and explain why they issued no warning to other agencies and building occupants. At this point, the question on which federal agency received advance warning from the source that provided the information to the Tulsa Police Department must be asked.
But we know there was advance warning.
Tons of it.
Not for that particular day, but there was an advance warning issued to that there might be.
There was advance warning given for that particular day. The entire fire department was on standby.
I know that, but not to the people in the building.
Oh no, nobody in the building.
But there were bomb threat warnings issued to the people and the agencies in the building and the courthouse and other places in Oklahoma City. Practice evacuations and all of that kinds of thing for the previous 2 weeks.
Right, right. Well, we did find out that on the day of the bombing, while the building was being surveilled and surrounded by FBI and BATF, the Oklahoma City Fire Department was on standby the entire time.
Yes, we knew that. And we knew that the police department knew it also.
Yeah. The end of this paragraph reads, it has been reported that the BATF in Oklahoma City received advance warning that there was a bomb threat on the building. Could this be the same source? If so, it must be asked if the BATF might be guilty of inaction. That's the end of that little section. All right, I'm going to move to the conclusion of the report.
Can I read that?
Certainly.
I want to read
By
that
all
conclusion
means.
Because I love this conclusion.
It's great.
And I want to give it the emphasis that I think it deserves.
Go dramatic.
This is the conclusion of the report, ladies and gentlemen. And I quote, it should be apparent to the investigator that McVeigh and Nichols, virtually unassisted, could not have planned, provided for, and executed the bombing by themselves. Much has been written by explosives experts and professional investigators concerning the lack of capability of the single truck bomb containing only 4,600 pounds of ammonium nitrate explosive mixture to do the damage that was accomplished. Little is known about McVeigh's activities since he left the Army in 1992. It is possible. Now listen to this very carefully, ladies and gentlemen, because we arrived at this conclusion within days after the bombing took place. Quote, it is possible that he was identified by a recruiter during his military service during the Gulf War and was subsequently recruited into the covert intelligence community. If this is the case, then it becomes apparent that many theories concerning the Oklahoma City bombing appear more valid. Examples, there were military high explosive devices inside the building. McVeigh was working with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to help apprehend the actual bombers. A contract wet team organized and executed the bombing to destroy records, inflame public sentiment for political expediency, and embarrass the conservative politicians in power in Congress. Drug trafficking and money laundering by the covert intelligence organizations would not be exposed by hard evidence and other theories and items of suspicion. The end result is that it appears that other, much higher entities than McVeigh and Nichols are involved. The investigation should not stop or even slow down with the apprehension of McVeigh and Nichols as the only suspects. With leads into the right-wing, Christian, constitutionalist, militia, patriot, National Rifle Association, conservative, and other groups, with the exception of war and the Elohim City Strassmeyer connection, not developing anything of substance, it is now time to explore the other side of the political spectrum. It is the opinion of this writer that the investigation is far from over. And that is the end of the report and the end of the conclusion. And I want to explain something here. When he says, with leads into the right-wing, Christian, constitutionalist, militia, patriot, NRA, conservative, and other groups, what he's talking about is they did not develop anything of substance. They are not implicated in the bombing. Nothing in that direction goes anywhere at all.
Correct. I would like to comment on something that is making the rounds right now in this regard. I had the opportunity to hear another independent investigator on shortwave the other day, whose primary belief at this moment is that the FBI was not involved in the bombing, but that they have been called in to cover the flubbed mistakes of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And I want to publicly state that this is absolutely false, completely and totally false.
It is the most absolutely blathering, blister-knackled boobernop that I have...
Be careful, Bill.
I am trying my very best to withhold some choice words that I learned in the Navy. But,
well, let me explain some things to our listener about this. The FBI is not covering anybody's fanny but their own. Not only do we have Oklahoma City FBI leaders, officials, and agents on the scene before the bombing, and, you know, then the bomb goes off, they've taken cover and their jackets are all encrusted with concrete and broken glass and stuff like that. But in the videotapes that we have reviewed that were taken within the first hour of the blast, there are also FBI agents videotaped downtown Oklahoma City from Houston, Texas. And they swore up and down when they were asked about the bombing that they did not arrive on the scene before 5 p.m. that afternoon. They were there as early as 9:30 in the morning.
Yes, positively, absolutely identified.
Positively ID'd. And there's also the matter of, in the course of the Sheriff's Department videotape, part of that videotape involved taking pictures of every license plate in every damaged vehicle in the area. And some of those license plates are from out of state, in particular Massachusetts. There are some other states there. Traces are being run on these plates, and they appear at this moment to belong to FBI agents from Massachusetts who, for some unknown reason, happened to be in downtown Oklahoma City before the bombing occurred in the Primo parking spots right across from the building to participate in this sting operation. We have the testimony of the desk clerk, one of the desk clerks from the Medallion Hotel, that 30 out-of-state FBI agents arrived in Oklahoma City several days before the bombing, and that number increased to 60 after the bombing. They were all from out of town. And, you know, we have out-of-town ATF guys on the scene as well. But the FBI is not leaping in here to cover the bad deeds of the BATF. This part was an FBI operation.
The FBI is deeply, heavily involved in this, along with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, certain elements of the Oklahoma Police Department, fire department, and others.
Well, you know that if Louis Free comes from Washington, D.C. to be downtown in front of the building for the big arrest, and if Bob Ricks, the head of the FBI at the time in Oklahoma City, is downtown in front of the building talking to John Doe 2 before the bomb goes off, they're not covering anybody's errors but their own. And so this whole idea that the FBI is just in there trying to keep the BATF from being once again government agency non grata, that's a bunch of crap. And I think probably everybody out there knows which investigative reporter I'm talking about that is putting out this story. But it's baloney and it's lies, and we can prove it.
We know who you are, and we saw what you did, and you're going down. And if you were a part of it or you know anything about it, you had better come forward now. Come forward now. Save yourself. Because I'm going to tell you, the people involved in this are going down for a long, long time. What else do we have? We have Gary Hunt, absolutely identified as being a resident at the Grand Continental Hotel for the week previous to the bombing. We have him absolutely, positively identified by body measurement proportion comparison analysis as the person on the film taken by a local television station. He was captured just within minutes after the explosion, walking away from the blast with a companion, both of them holding transmitters in their hands.
I don't know what more I can add to that. It just about says it all. He's been positively ID'd by 4 different people that work at the Grand Continental as having been in their hotel 4 or 5 days before the bombing, along with John Doe 2 and several other companion types. And then, of course, he was videotaped accidentally for him on the scene. And he's been identified from the body proportion stuff. So there's not much more I can add to that other than that. I don't care what he says. He was here. And we'll just let that go at that.
What else have we got that we need to talk about?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about, and this kind of ties back in with Luke Franey and his hand injury, his supposed hand injury. I have been talking to some witnesses who worked with Dr. Don Shumway when he was downtown. He was one of the first physicians on the scene after the bombing exploded. He had a clinic called the Broadway Clinic located at 18th and Broadway. After the explosion, he was immediately down there coordinating a lot of the medical relief efforts. And what I have been told is that he was asked by several FBI agents to falsify reports indicating that they were injured. And he refused to do this. And that the doctor who was working with him at that particular moment, whose name I'm not going to say, okay?
That's fine.
Because this man said that he would falsify the injury reports so that these guys would look like they were in the building. And Chumley told this doctor that if he did falsify those reports, Chumley would expose him.
And we don't know if he did or not.
We do not know if he did or not. But we do know that Dr. Chumley was very outspoken about this matter. He had several meetings with close friends of his and with his attorney for several weeks after the bombing. And then in late August, early September, he turned up dead in an unexpected plane crash, flying back from a hunting trip in New Mexico. Dr. Chumley was a very skilled pilot. He had extra safety equipment on his plane. He'd been flying that same route to do those same hunting trips for years. The FAA report on the crash was totally whitewashed, but the sheriff who found the wreckage thought it was pretty strange. And I guess I need to investigate him and interview him to find out what he thought was strange about it. But there are a lot of people who are questioning now the matter of Dr. Chumley's death, because apparently there are some medical reports that have been falsified and faked to make it look like there were more BATF agents and FBI agents in the building that were hurt.
When in reality there wasn't any.
They weren't in there at all.
None of them were. Okay, and that brings us to the all-important death toll and officer. Well, we're going to talk about that officer who was murdered and some of the other things right after this short pause. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. We will be right back. Oh boy, yes we will.
There's no reason for you to lose your mind, 'cause I've seen something that's gonna change our time. If I could, I'd make you understand. If I could, I'd make you understand. There's no hurry, it's gonna come for sure. And I know that someday we're gonna end our war. If I
After listening to this broadcast tonight, ladies and gentlemen, now maybe you understand why President Clinton in a White House memo, which Rush Limbaugh read on the air, named me, William Cooper, as the most dangerous radio host in America. And he's absolutely right. I am dangerous to those who would destroy America, those who lie to the American people, those who have a socialist, Marxist, communist agenda against the principles and ideals upon which this nation was founded. I will fight them to the death with words, with any weapon that they wish to employ. And you can thank Swiss America Trading in Phoenix for allowing me to broadcast this truth. I shouldn't say allowing, but in partnership, sponsoring the Hour of the Time, and for their financial backing of the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Please call Swiss America Trading and thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Thank them for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Thank them for making available to you gold and silver coin to help you protect at least a portion of your assets against what's sure to come if the Marxist agenda is pushed to its full course. And all you have to do to understand what's happening in America and which way we're going and why is just read the Communist Manifesto written by Marx and Friedrich Engels. It's all there, laid out for you. If you want to get a little more into it, then you need to read the history of international socialism and communism. And it's not hidden, ladies and gentlemen. They have never made a secret of what they have planned to do. Khrushchev from the United Nations pounded his shoe upon the table and yelled at our representative, "We will not have to invade. We will destroy you from within." You see, Joseph McCarthy was 100% right. And the recent opening of the archives of the KGB and what used to be known as the Soviet Union has proven that not only was he right, but he named exactly those agents that had infiltrated the United States government, and he knew exactly the exact number stated in the KGB records of communists who had infiltrated and were ensconced in our State Department. Joseph McCarthy was destroyed by the communist-controlled press in this country, and they have had free rein because no one since then but me has dared stand up and name them by name and spell out their agenda to the American people. And the Oklahoma City bombing is a part of that agenda. Call Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. Ask for the current newsletter, ladies and gentlemen. Ask them how you can get your hands on some real money. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-BUY-COIN. Do it now. You'll be so glad that you did. A great weight will be lifted off your shoulders. 1-800-BUY-COIN. You know how you are. You're not picking up the phone. Do it now. Don't procrastinate. You see, I can see you. There is no reason for you to lose your mind, ladies and gentlemen, if you always stay tuned to the Hour of the Time, if you read Veritas newspaper, if you open your mind, if you stop listening to people and believing, if you make the point to investigate everything and not accept like you have done in the past, you too can get away from that awful feeling in your gut that something is wrong and that panic because you don't know what it is, to knowing what it is and becoming active and helping us fight against it. The alternative is to become a slave in the new world totalitarian socialist order. Wake up. You've been had. Well, Michelle, you went to get your notes, and now we're going to talk about the death toll. The people who are primary witnesses to what really happened with the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building, as in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, are now being bumped off one by one. Let's go through the list.
Okay. Some of these I have names for. Some of them I don't have names for yet. Okay. Our first...
Now, wait a minute. What do you mean by that? We know who they are, but you don't want to say, or...
On some of them, yeah.
Okay. I just want to... See, I know what you're talking about, but those people out there in radio land don't.
Okay.
So you have to make sure that you explain yourself.
Okay. All right. All of the people in this list of nine that I'm going to read had something to do with trying to come forward and explain what they saw or identify something that they saw that they knew in their heart was wrong and in opposition to the official story. And each one of these people is now dead. The first... was an FBI agent, and he died in an unexplained and uninvestigated one-vehicle head-on crash on Interstate 240 around 74th Street in Oklahoma City. And we have a very similar incident with a BATF officer who also died in an unexplained and uninvestigated one-vehicle head-on crash on I-35 coming south, just south of the Kansas line into Oklahoma City, and this occurred approximately 2 weeks after the bombing. Then there's the matter of Dr. Chumley, who died in the plane crash, and he was going public with what he had observed at the bomb site and the things that he was being asked to do and didn't want to do. Terry Dixon was an Oklahoma Highway Patrol officer, and I believe the last time I was on the show, his body had just been found. His body was found like the last Thursday of September.
That's correct, and you were just on the show shortly after that.
Right, and he had been missing for 6 months. He had been extremely and openly critical of Bob Ricks because Bob Ricks had been rewarded for his performance of the bombing by being given the head position for the Oklahoma Department of Public Safety. This made Bob Ricks Terry Dixon's boss. And Terry Dixon had very bad feelings about Ricks' performance in Waco, Texas, and considered Bob Ricks personally responsible for the Waco incident, although he was upset about friends of his.
You mean the Waco massacre?
The Waco massacre,
yes. Let's call it what it is. Let's call traitors traitors and scum scum.
Well, Terry Dixon had been very open in his dislike of Bob Ricks, and he was working with Officer Terry Yeeke. And we don't really know what kills Terry Dixon. By the time his body was found, there was really no ruling made on what killed him, just that he was found dead, and they guessed that he'd had some kind of a seizure.
How long after he disappeared was he found?
6 months.
6 months, and his body was at an advanced stage of deterioration.
Right.
And he was actually sitting in his car, wasn't he?
Yeah, his car had just sort of gone off the road. It was about 40 yards off the road in the woods, and he was just dead there.
And for 6 months, nobody found that car or saw it or reported
right.
it or anything. That's really hard to believe, but it seems to be the truth so far.
There was a lady, nurse, ambulance driver type who died unexpectedly, well, very unexpectedly, of a brain aneurysm, or so we were told. And that would have been 95, late October perhaps, or September. And she had some information about injuries and what she saw at the bomb site and was talking about it and was removed. There was a fireman who went hunting in Colorado and was killed in a hunting accident 2 weeks before Christmas, 95. The story goes that he was shot by a deer hunter, but the deer hunter was never found or arrested, and this fireman was helping Officer Yeeke with his investigation into the bombing. A soldier from Tinker Air Force Base who worked with the civil engineer group turned up dead. Tinker originally investigated it because the death occurred in base housing at Tinker, and when they investigated it, they considered it a homicide, and they were looking at it as a homicide, and yet for some unexplained reason, in the craziest switcho changeo of jurisdiction I've ever heard, the body somehow became the property of the Oklahoma City Police Department. And they decided that this man had committed suicide of a drug overdose. And the civil engineers at Tinker know what was going on. They were down there working the Bobcat crews. They did a lot of stuff. They know a lot of things, and they're trying to be very careful about releasing their information in a sane manner. This guy made some mistakes that were fatal to him.
Who's next? And let's talk about Yeeke.
Well, he was coming after the Fort Sill lab.
Okay, go ahead.
This is a matter still under investigation. I need to know more about this. We have a Fort Sill lab technician working with the medical examiners, working with the doctors, and he'd been pretty much running his mouth off about falsified DNA scripts. He was working with Dr. Jordan and Dr. Moloch, who are both very good friends of Bill Clinton in Arkansas. And this lab technician was stating all over town and much too loudly that the DNA strips that were done on body parts were phony, that the DNA tests were not really done at all, and that there were some inconsistencies and problems with the burials. And I don't know how graphic we want to go on that.
Well, let's...
Shall we let it rest?
Yeah, let it rest. It'll be in the book.
Yeah. And also, you know, we have talked before on this program about the over 80 body parts and tissue samples that were supposedly being held in storage at the medical examiner's office. We've now learned that approximately 1,500 pounds of tissue and body parts were buried in a mass grave in August in 1995, and there is a marker where they are buried, and we could talk about that another day.
Yes.
Okay, but 1,500 pounds is a lot.
Yeah, it is. Previously, we knew that they had at least 80 different pieces of tissue and body parts that did not match the identified bodies or anybody that was wounded from DNA matching, but now we know that the DNA matching was all baloney, or it's alleged that it was all baloney, faked. So that might account for that. But now we come to the fact that it wasn't just 80 separate pieces of body parts, it's over 1,500 pounds.
I can't explain that.
Not only that, it's very gruesome to talk about, and we don't want to to send our audience to bed in that frame of mind. So let's skip on.
Well, now we can deal a little more detail with about Officer Yeeke. Terrence Yeeke was working very closely with Dr. Chumley. He was working very closely with Terry Dixon. And several other people. All of these people are dead now. And Yeeke had made comments and noticed and remarked in his report that he filed on the bombing that there were just too many ATF, DEA, FBI guys on the scene. And that bothered him that they were there so quickly in such great numbers and so many of them from out of town. And it was because of that that he began looking into the incident. And I think probably a lot of people in downtown Oklahoma City knew Dr. Chumley. He was a real popular guy. He was my doctor for a while. Everybody knew him and respected him. And Dr. Chumley just never would do anything underhanded, and he always was a real honest, upright guy. And he made too many threats to people about exposing what they did, and I think that's probably why he was, why his plane went down. But one of the things that Chumley remarked when he was working with Yeeky on this matter was that the black jackets that were worn by the FBI were embedded with concrete and little bits of glass. And this occurred when they took cover, when they received the signal that the bomb had not been deactivated. And Chumley was asked to dummy up the medical reports and wouldn't do that. And when Yeeky finally uncovered, well, see, first Dr. Chumley was the first to go. And then Dixon went. And that left Yeeky. And he was pretty much keeping his own counsel at that time, and he had a few friends that were in on what he was working on. And he met with these people, and I have met with these people to ask them about the last day of his life. And he had scheduled a meeting with a person that he thought was a friend of his. And he was leaving at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to meet with this individual, and he was supposed to call back in around 3 p.m. to his friends to let them know that he arrived safely with this information. One, of course, we've already talked about the YMCA surveillance video, and he had that in his possession. He did not ever call at 3 o'clock. He never called again. Nobody could reach him. He wasn't seen again for 4.5 hours, and his body was found about 200 yards from his vehicle in a field in El Reno. There was very little blood in his car. There were no fingerprints in his car, including his own. When they found his body out in the field, the tendons and muscles and blood vessels of both arms, from the palms to the elbows, were just shredded. There was a gun in his right hand. The gun had the fingerprint of his right thumb and his right little finger on it, and Terrence Yeeky was left-handed. All of the information that was in his car was gone, of course, naturally. And somebody that Terry trusted set him up, and he was murdered. And that's what we know about him.
There were also, ladies and gentlemen, no prints found in his car, no fingerprints whatsoever, not even his own, which means that somebody took great pains and took an awful lot of time to go over every single portion of that automobile and destroy any and all prints that may have been there. So we know that Officer Yeeky did not commit suicide. He was murdered. He was murdered. And he was murdered because he had information that would have exposed what really happened at the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, some of which we've already revealed to you on tonight's broadcast.
The only other thing we can say about Yeeky right now is that he left a legacy of information to us, and this will all be exposed in due time.
Yes, and I think it's about time for me to say something here for all of the people who are deeply involved in this, in a criminal nature, that might wish to take steps to try and stop this information from being disseminated to the public. There's nothing you can do. The intelligence service and its investigative officers always, as a matter of routine policy, make many copies of every piece of evidence, every document, every tape, everything that we ever take into our possession and distribute it amongst our most trusted operatives across the country. If anything were to happen to me or to Michelle Marie Moore, to Major Moore, as a result of our activities in exposing your crimes, those who have this information in their possession will just take over where we left off, and nothing will change, nothing will stop, and you are going down. So don't even think about it.
An interesting, well, I don't know how interesting it is. It's pretty sad piece of information came to light when I began interviewing people who were inside the building at the time of the blast, who survived and lost many friends in the building. In dealing with the Secret Service office in that building, there weren't any survivors of the Secret Service office at all. Everybody in the Secret Service who was stationed in the Murrow Building was killed. And there were two guys in particular in that office who played a role in other things. Alan Witcher was scheduled to testify in the Whitewater hearings about inconsistencies and involvements at the federal level in the Vince Foster murder. And a man named Mickey Maroney was scheduled to testify about cocaine use on the part of Bill and Hillary Clinton. He was on one of the Secret Service teams that guarded them. He accompanied Hillary Clinton to the Rose Law Firm and watched them shred documents. And the thing that is upsetting about the Secret Service guys is that they were in their office. They received a fax prior to the blast telling them to stay at their desks. They would receive an important phone call at 9 a.m. And so they were ordered to stay there and die.
And so they did. Being good troopers, they obeyed orders and now they're dead. Somebody wanted to make sure that they did not leave their office. And because of that, they're not here anymore.
Yep. I don't know what more we can go into this evening. George Leslie, the parking lot attendant for the Journal Record Building parking lot, is on record as having argued with several BATF agents in the parking lot before the bombing because they were illegally parking their cars in the lot. But that's just one more.
It really isn't funny.
No, it's not. But after a while, you know, it's you have passed the shock point anymore, and it's you got to have a little levity. But I tell you this only to explain that the number of witnesses who saw the FBI and the BATF there, who observed them, who photographed them, who videotaped them, it's just overwhelming. There's no way this will be covered up. They can't get rid of everybody. They can't get rid of the photographs, the tapes, or any of that stuff. It's out there.
And they're not going to talk themselves out of this like they did Waco and Ruby Ridge. They're going down this time. We're going to put them in jail. And we're going to put them in jail all the way up to the top, as high as we can reach, and find anybody who knew about this or was complicit in any way, shape, or form. And there's going to be quite a few people at the Anti-Defamation League that are going to go to jail over this also. I can guarantee you that. We know that the Anti-Defamation League, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation were actively surveilling these people for months and possibly as long as 2 years before the bomb actually went off at the Mura Federal Building in Oklahoma City. Now, I know that, you know, when we laugh at some of these things, folks, you don't understand that we have been investigating this from the beginning. And we've gone over and over and over again. And believe me, we have had our bouts with floods of tears. And we have been touched deep within our heart like you cannot even imagine. And we have been angry beyond your understanding. And we have found ways to deal with all of this. And now some of it at some times is just a little bit humorous to us because we've seen it all and we've heard it all and we've dug down in the depths of degradation and evilness that you cannot even imagine. And we're bringing this to the American public. We have already published the first results of our investigation in a book entitled Oklahoma City Day One. It was authored by Michelle Marie Moore, who at the time of the explosion and for up until August of this year was the station chief for the intelligence service for the Second Continental Army, the Republic Militia, for the states of Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, and Arkansas. She was relieved of her command in August and placed upon indefinite leave in order to continue compiling the evidence that we have and putting together two more volumes of the Oklahoma City series, which is the results of the investigation of the intelligence service and all of the men and women across the country whom we cannot name because it would compromise their ability to perform their job. But I've got to tell you, you must get a copy of Oklahoma City Day One, and you must read it. You must read it. If you would like to have a copy, please send $34.95 postpaid. Make your check or money order payable to Harvest and send it to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's $34.95. Make your check or money order payable to Harvest and send it to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, Arizona, 85925. I'm going to say this one more time. $34.95. Make check or money order payable to Harvest and send it to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, Arizona, 85925. The book is encyclopedic. It is monumental in scope. It will absolutely floor you with the information and documentation that it contains. Everything is sourced, documented, indexed. There is an extensive appendix. It is 640 pages. It is only the information covering the actual day of the bombing, April 19, 1995. The second volume, which is in the process of being compiled now, entitled Oklahoma City, The Aftermath, will pick up after April the 19th, 1995. The volume of information that we have accumulated is beyond your most wildest imagination, I can assure you.
I'd like to address comments to listeners in the Oklahoma area. You can buy Oklahoma City Day One in Oklahoma City at Bollinger's Books on North May. It's available in Hastings Books and Videos in Yukon and in Hastings Books and Videos in Norman. It will soon be available in the Dell City American Opinion Bookstore. And if you would like to see this in the American Opinion Bookstore nationwide, just go there and request it, and they will carry it.
And in the Eager, Arizona area, you can get it at Stewart Books in Springerville. Stewart Books in Springerville. And if it's sold out, all you have to do is order it. It's published by the Harvest Trust right here at Eager. And we can rush a case of books down to Stewart Books in a moment's notice. And we hope that you all will help us by purchasing this book and spreading the word and putting pressure on Congress. Buy a book and give it to your congressman. But don't send it to them, because their aides will just bury it in the trash somewhere and they'll never see it. Make sure that you put it in their hands. Give it to the governor of your state. Give it to your local sheriff and your local police chief, so that they will be more aware of the political machinations that are happening in this country to help destroy this country and bring the Constitution down about our ears. Don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after this brief pause. This is the Voice of Freedom.
You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to continue with the hour of the time just exactly as we told you we would until we are finished disseminating all this information that we have accumulated that has not yet been released to the public. And believe me, we're not releasing every single bit of information that we have. In fact, there's an awful lot that we're not, but we're going to release as much as we possibly can tonight. We don't have a whole lot more to go, but we're going to continue with the hour of the time until we are finished. To our affiliate stations, if you wish to continue to carry this broadcast, please feel free to do so. If you do not, please return to your normal broadcasting. For those of you who are steady listeners to Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham, Quest for Health will be aired immediately following the conclusion of this special edition of the Hour of the Time. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this special extended edition of the Hour of the Time. We are disclosing some of the information that was not included in Oklahoma City Day 1 that we have investigated and accumulated into the Oklahoma City bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building. I have as my guest in studio tonight Major Michelle Marie Moore, who was at that time the station chief for the intelligence service of the Second Continental Army of the Republic Militia of the states of Oklahoma, Kansas, Arkansas, and Missouri. She was relieved of her command in August in order to concentrate on the analysis and accumulation and recording of the evidence and the compilation into Volume 2 and Volume 3 of our Oklahoma City series, which is actually the report of the investigation of the intelligence service of the Second Continental Army, the Republic Militia, into the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Most of the people, and there are many, many, many people, ladies and gentlemen, whom we cannot acknowledge publicly by name, because to do so would compromise their ability to perform their job as intelligence officers for the intelligence service of the Second Continental Army, the Republic Militia. But all of this information is really their work. They did it. They conducted the investigation. They uncovered the facts. They are still working. Many of them took great risks, spent a great deal of their own money. And without them, none of this would have been possible. So you owe a great debt of gratitude to them, and someday maybe you'll be able to erect a statue with their name on it in your town square. They did this work directly under the supervision of Major Michelle Marie Moore, who is one of our most competent and trusted officers. And now we'll go back to her if she is ready for the next round of revelations. That's okay if you're not ready. I can talk a little bit more if you're ready, then we'll
Let's do this and then you can talk.
Okay.
When we were talking about Terrence Yeakey, I neglected to mention that the autopsy report for him has disappeared from the records. At this moment, a falsified phony one has not yet appeared, although we're kind of expecting one to show up at any time. But at this particular moment, the autopsy for Terrence Yeakey has vanished. It's not available. His police reports that he filed on the day of the bombing have been pulled from the police computers and are not available. There are four other police officers whose reports have also disappeared from the police computers. I don't know if I name them or not. Probably not.
No, let's not name them right at this present time.
Okay. We've spoken with witnesses who worked at the bomb site, who were volunteers, and they were continually told by FBI agents, you didn't see that, or forget that you saw that, or you didn't hear that. And that was pretty much the mindset of everyone who was working downtown, that they were participating in this operation, but they weren't supposed to see or hear anything that they were seeing and hearing, which is kind of a hard thing to pull off. And the former building manager of the Murrah Building and his assistant, who is now the actual building manager for the GSA, knew that the building was targeted at the sting operation level of information. And they were aware that a truck was coming, and but they didn't think it was going to blow up. All these people thought the truck wasn't going to blow up. And it was, this is the level two information. They thought that they were going to make an arrest. A lot of nice pictures would be taken that get a lot of good press. Bad guys would go to jail and we'd all live happily ever after. And they were all, of course, betrayed. But the official building manager has since retired. He wanted out as fast as he could get out. And he knows a lot. And he could tell us a lot, and I wish he would. That's all I can say about that. I spoke with a man who works for HUD. He was on the fifth floor when the bomb went off. His desk where he was sitting was located about 8 feet from column B5. And he helped a woman escape from his office. She had been blinded by flying glass. And it took them about 45 minutes to find their way out of the building. And he was in quite a daze and really stunned by what